Ever feel like planning a trip is almost as fun as taking it? Hotel comparisons, restaurant reservations, a perfectly timed itinerary. What if your love of planning travel could actually become a source of income? As a Fora advisor, it can. Fora is a modern travel agency built for people who love to plan travel and help others travel well. With best-in-class training, powerful booking tech, and a vibrant global community of experts sharing real insider knowledge, you can confidently build your own travel business on your terms, from anywhere. Every hotel, cruise, and experience you book earns you commission. And with access to more than 7,000 preferred travel partners from iconic brands to boutique gems, you'll unlock VIP perks like upgrades, resort credits, and late checkout. The kind of elevated travel experiences most travelers never get. Now's the time to turn your passion for travel into a fulfilling business with Fora. Become a Fora advisor today at foratravel.com/advisor. That's foratravel.com/advisor.
Hello and welcome to YA Book Jam, the monthly book club podcast with your host JL Bleakley.
And Arden Jones.
This month we have a very special guest host with us, but before we introduce them, let's talk about our book choice.
Last month, Shelley teased her choice as a book for everyone who has ever felt invisible in high school. It's, of course, Iris Green Unseen, written by the amazing Louise Finch and published by Scholastic. As we mentioned, it was Shelley's choice, and it is a book that's very close to her heart. So there is only one person that Shelley would trust to take her place this week, and that is the wonderful author herself, Louise Finch. Welcome to YA Book Jam, Louise.
Hello, it's really lovely to be here. Thank you for having me, and thank you to Shelley for recommending Iris.
It's the first time we've ever had the author of the book we're discussing on the episode with us. So yes, welcome, Louise. We are so excited to have you. I don't know who's more nervous, us or you, I'm not sure, but yeah, it's amazing having you on, and this is your first time on the podcast, but it's not the first time that we've met. I'm a little embarrassed to say this, but we met you briefly at Yelk, and I'm terrible at recognising authors or knowing what they look like. Same. And I stopped you and asked you to take a photograph for Arden and I in front of the Yelk letters, having no idea who you were. I was just like, hey, can you take a photo for us? And if anyone goes on the Instagram and sees like our kind of roundup of Yelk, there's a picture of us with the big Yelk letters. That was Louise channeling her inner Iris Green and doing the photography for us. And it's a great picture. So thank you so much. And it wasn't until we walked
That's
away
fine.
And Arden was like, you know, that was Louise Finch, right? I'm like, no, I didn't know that.
So I was just delighted to have a chance to take a photo, to be honest. So,
but thank you anyway. It was a great photo. But before we get into the Iris Green chat, we have to ask, because we've asked our other guest hosts before, we are the Jam Pots. We have our sweet strawberry jam, which is Shelley. Arden is our bitter raspberry jam, and I am our dark and a bit twisted black currant jam. So if you were a jam, what flavour would you be and why?
I'm going to be apricot jam, I think. Ooh. Less, I know, rogue choice. Less because of the flavour, but the texture. Apricot chunks make it a bit of a tricky jam, a little bit stubborn, if you will, which is a quality I feel I share with it. And something I think that you need to be a writer, actually, because obviously something has to get you through to the end of books.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, a stubborn jam is perfect.
Yeah, I'd never considered it before, but I actually now feel a deep affinity to apricot jam.
Oh, nice.
We've had a marmalade, haven't we, as yeah. well? So I'm loving the mixtures of jams and flavours that we get on here. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get into our book choice by reading the blurb. My breathing stops. My eyes tear. Deep down, I already know. And I already can't bear it. He kisses her. She lets him kiss her. When Iris discovers her boyfriend cheating on her with one of her best friends, she feels invisible. And then she is invisible. She takes a photo of herself in the mirror to make sure she's not dreaming. She isn't. All she can see in the picture is the floating camera. And the less she can be seen herself, the more she understands the people around her, including Baker, the boy in the darkroom, who might be exactly what she needs to make her way back to herself.
Love that. So I actually read this book without reading the blurb. I knew nothing about it, just that Shelley loved it. And I usually would gravitate towards like a romantasy or a thriller. So just going from the cover, I assumed it was contemporary. I didn't really overthink it. I just wanted to go in blind, and I was hooked from the first word. We should say now that this episode will contain spoilers. So if you haven't read this book yet and you think you'd be interested based on the blurb, then just hit pause, go give it a read. I promise it won't take long. I read this book so quickly because I just couldn't put it down. Then when you're finished, come back. We'll still be waiting for you and you can join in the rest of the podcast. But I'll be honest, I just sat back and enjoyed the reading experience because I didn't think I would need to worry about questions as it was Shelley's choice. And usually I write notes as I go, but I was just so invested in the story, I barely came up for air while I was reading it. So coming up with the questions have been a little bit tricky this time, but we're going to give it a whirl. So let's start with our opening. We have Iris in the school toilet and she sees the message graffitied on the stall about her that says Iris Green is grey. And at face value, that might not seem too bad. Like, after all, there's worse comments written about other girls, but it hits Iris hard. And I thought this whole opening scene was a brilliant introduction to Iris's character, how she saw herself and how she saw others. And I immediately just felt endeared to her. I wanted to see this girl learn to love herself and know her worth from the first chapter. How did you find the opening, Arden? And Louise, what were the key elements of Iris's character that you wanted to get across to the reader?
Oh, great question, Jess. Well, I absolutely loved it. I also read it without reading the blurb, and I never do that, but I just wanted to just dive in and without an idea of really what the story was about. And because me and Shelley have quite a similar book taste, when she recommended it, I knew before it was a book jam book that I would be reading it soon. Plus, sorry, I just have to be fangirly here, but I love The Eternal Return of Clara Hart as well. So I knew I would love this too.
Thank you.
And I was not wrong at all. And like you, Jess, I just steamed through it. I read it within 2 days. I just couldn't put it down. And like, for me, Iris Green, I thought, was such a relatable character, especially in a world where there's just so much pressure to be, look and act a certain way. I was immediately taken in by her and her story. And I think even more as an adult rather than a teen or a young adult. At school, I was always quite different. I was the grunger, rocker, sometimes weirdo, not in a bad way, strangely, but I always stood out at school. And no one like was horrible to me because I was different. So I never really felt unseen. But as an adult, in a lot of social situations, I often feel grey. I struggle to hold a conversation with people. I feel boring, unintelligent, and I just don't feel like I fit in. And so I come away from these situations and I think people must either not think about me at all or just think these same things about me. So that part in the school toilet just really got me. But I just want to say also here, finding the Kidlit community, I do feel like I fit in. I found my people, and like, you're all very much my own found family. So it's like, I finally got there. I did get there.
Yeah, that's so true about the Kidlit community. I kind of feel the same way, I think. And I think that's why I try and write characters who feel different, because I think really all of us feel a bit different on the inside because we don't know in detail other people's struggles. And I wanted to kind of convey that in Iris from the start and show how easily she could be rattled by something quite throwaway, that sort of barely offensive, lazy bit of graffiti on a school bathroom wall that's a pun about her surname, because it points to her as somebody who has those concerns about herself, who sets so much store in other people's opinions and the low self-worth at the centre of that. And the horror that she experiences just from realising that people have noticed that she exists, that she has been seen. But she does try to fight it. And I thought that was also an important thing as kind of like a promise, because she tries to fight it the only way that she really knows how, which is by taking a photo of it and trying to transform how she feels about it by making it art. So I hope that it's clear that there's kind of a spark in her too, and that you can be kind of rooting for her to find that and nurture that. And that it will be clear that the art will play quite a big role in that.
Yeah, definitely. I loved hearing your explanation of that, because I just felt like straight away I could really just see what a strong character she was going to be. And yeah, it didn't disappoint. She's a brilliant character and so well written. But yeah, we get introduced to the key people in Iris's life very early on. We have the mum who works really hard and she isn't always there for Iris. Then there are two best friends, Bert and Olivia, and her boyfriend, Theo. So this isn't a spoiler, because we find out very early that Theo cheats on Iris with her best friend, Olivia, and Iris witnesses it. And then Iris breaks up with Theo over text and says nothing to her friends, just carrying on as if nothing happened, because she doesn't want to rock the boat or burst her friendship bubble. And this was a part I was totally in awe of Iris over. Like, I'm a massive oversharer. Like, I mean, I don't know if anyone's realised that already. Like, if you've listened to any previous podcasts, I'm just there bluttering, like, that's not even a word. Just telling everyone so much about my life. But if I was Iris, I couldn't have kept this to myself. So I was just like, I see the strength in that, because she needed to absorb and just get her head around everything before knowing how she was going to deal with it. Mm-hmm. Whereas back in my school days, and probably now, I would have stormed over there screaming and shouting. In fact, one of my school besties did kiss my then boyfriend at school. So that heartbreak was there. Plus, he was a massive twonk as well. So I have your back, Iris Green. You are seen.
Oh, I'm so sorry to bring all that back.
So, do you know, so many young adult books to always tap into, especially when they're about important sort of emotional subjects, and if it ever features like abuse or gaslighting, those things always come up. And I think it's a really good thing, because people need to be reading these sorts of books. It's so important. And especially like this, and like Clara Hart as well, it's just such important subjects that people need to know about. So thank you. So yeah, Jess, how was you feeling at this point in the story? And Louise, why are you hurting us like this?
Oh, that moment with Olivia and Theo. Oh. You could just see it coming. And it was like watching a train crash in slow motion. But like if the train was smashing through your heart, not like through a wall. It's just, it was unbearable. But I felt so bad for Iris. And I was so angry at Olivia, because she and Bert had just been moaning about Theo and how much time Iris spends with him. And meanwhile, Olivia's away smooching him behind her back. Oh, I was like, you are, and I was livid with her. But something about the helplessness of that moment, where even if Iris didn't actually turn invisible, I think she would have walked away without saying anything, because that's just how meek she is. And I say the word meek on purpose, because a lot of people think meek and weak is the same thing. But meek means like quiet and gentle, and perhaps someone who's submissive, but it has really positive connotations as well as the negative ones, like patient, peaceful, modest. And I did feel like Iris was maybe this kind of shy, meek character, but I wanted her to be able to see her worth and stand up for herself without losing that part of her, because it's also what made her so special and such a good friend and an empathetic person, and probably why she was such a good photographer, that she could see the beauty and the broken and like the exceptional and the mundane. And I feel like she was kind of like a peacemaker, like she didn't want to like cause this whole scene and this whole drama and destroy her whole friendship group. And I mean, that's her personality. My personality made me want to walk into the pages and punch Theo straight in the face for being such an ass. But I love that you took this approach with her, Louise. And Iris isn't the type of character you see in young adult as a main character, and not a personality type that's usually chosen for a story's hero. And I just love that you sort of broke the mold that way, even if it did really hurt my heart to read it.
Yeah, I'm sorry for the pain. And thank you for thinking about Iris in so much detail. It's really lovely. Yeah, I guess. And it's really interesting to hear the sort of both sides of it. So the sort of idea that she's being strong, and she's kind of also exercising that self-restraint. I was thinking about it in terms of not even telling people that you've been cheated on, because you don't believe that people will have your back, in terms of how little Iris expects people to prioritize her, which obviously you can't really blame her at this point in the story. But I guess as well as that, she does kind of therefore know that she has to kind of rely on herself in that moment a bit as well, and that by not letting other people in on it, I think she's kind of protecting herself a bit as well. Try to sort of minimize the harm by sort of seeding that, well, the emotional harm by seeding that perhaps Theo wasn't going to be the dream guy Iris thought he was. So the pain is hopefully clearly necessary for the realization to happen and for Iris to move on to much better things.
Definitely. And I mean, we're sitting here complaining about it, but if you listen to any other episode we do, we're like reading books like, give us more tension, where's the pain, where's all this? So now we actually have it, and it is what you want, because you want a book to make you feel. And I think if we were reading her experience and we felt nothing, then you know it wouldn't have that big impact that this book has by the time you get to the end of her story arc. So it hurt, but it was necessary hurt. And I liked what you said as well about Iris kind of sort of controlling the situation by not telling people as well, and that idea of, I can think in my mind, I was thinking she was just wanting to like not upset her friends, but then what you said was really poignant as well about her trying to protect herself by keeping it secret too. And it's so clear that she, like, the moment she's like, well, of course he'd kiss Olivia, she's amazing, why would you not want to kiss Olivia, why would you want me instead? And that was so realistic as well. Like, I think most of us have felt that way about something in life. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I love that part too. But all's not lost. Theo might be a total douche, but we meet Baker, the cute boy who haunts the photography darkroom with Iris. He's funny, he's charming, and he obviously enjoys being around her. And for the first time, it feels like someone is truly seeing her. He kind of cautiously approaches the friendship, like someone trying not to frighten a bird away, but he's patient and he meets her at her level with her art, which is something they both have in common. So cute, dark-haired, artsy guy who actually wants to get to know the girl and then falls for her. You've basically just set a bear trap for me to walk into, and one I will happily walk into every single time. I am such a sucker for a book boyfriend. Arden knows that. Like, I fall so easy, and Baker had me at hello. He was such a great character, and just proof that it's possible to write a good guy who still has flaws and is still a complex character, and they can kind of bring their own tension to the story. My favorite moments with them were when they were out together taking pictures. It was when Iris seemed the most relaxed, and I feel like I got to know them both the best through how they created their art. And I loved how he encouraged her and he pushed her out of her comfort zone. We all need people like that in our lives. And he wasn't just a love interest. He had a story arc as well. And it wasn't just him fixing Iris either, but he was learning about himself and what he truly wanted too. And in her own way, she was kind of pushing him out of his comfort zone as well. So they were exactly what each other needed at that point in their lives. And I get it, like, this isn't a question. I've just been rambling about how amazing Baker is, but I do have a question. And that is, what were both of your favorite moments of Iris and Baker in this story?
There were so many. I think everything that you've said, Jess, is just totally my favourite moments. Baker is just the best book boyfriend. Mm. He's not perfect, but no, like, who is perfect? He has a good heart and he saw Iris, apart from that one time where my heart was in my throat and I was like, please just see her, feel her or something. She's there. Like, it was, my heart was just pumping so hard. But if I have to think of a favourite moment, I think it was when they travelled into London. Mm. Those lines that he said were just all-consuming, perfect, and just like so beautifully and like but quietly romantic. It was just amazing. And they are, so if you don't mind, Louise, sorry.
Well, please do. Please read them.
Why on earth would I ever stop talking to you, Iris Green? Baker holds up his hands, little finger crooked towards me, in an offer, an old-fashioned promise. I wind my own little finger around it, and that's how we stay, all the way to London. I was just like, oh, it's not overly romantic. There's no kissing or any of that, but those quiet moments between them both were just, it's so respectful and just so beautiful. And I love that so much.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I like them too. I really like my particular writing loves are probably writing about people who are making art and also being in denial about their feelings. There's a lot of that in both my books. So that means that my favourite Baker and Iris scene could almost be any of them, because they spend most of the book doing that. But I'm quite partial to the one where they go to the footbridge together. It's quite early on, and Iris is taking photos of Baker, which I think is a very intense activity, to be staring down a camera lens at this hot guy that she doesn't feel good enough for but is somehow hanging out with. And I kind of enjoy the fluster, and also, like you, Jess, kind of like Iris stepping out of her comfort zone and being pushed a bit, because she needs it. And secretly, that's what she wants as well.
Yeah. I loved that moment as well. I just think to actually take photos of someone when you're feeling the way she felt was such a brave thing to do as well. Like, even though she was so uncomfortable and like so nervous and everything, it was to actually do that. And the pictures that she took, I wish I could see them, because I'm just picturing them, that, and I can see that they're stunning and beautiful, and I would love to see them in real life, because I think they would just be amazing.
We need an Iris Green Instagram account, or like a Baker Instagram account.
Yeah, with her photography. That would be so cool.
Because you're not busy enough, Louise.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I did have some plans to like renew, because I did a bit of darkroom photography when I was at high school, but I haven't since. And I had this grand plan to like renew my darkroom photography skills and like do it again, but I haven't. So sorry, that's not happening.
We'll just have to live in our imagination.
Well, she does end up getting a digital camera, so that's you could true, go digital.
True. But I am unfortunately married to a photographer, so I'm just too far behind to ever catch up with my skills now. There's no point.
So yeah, we kind of touched upon it earlier. One of the key components of the story, the fact that Iris is completely disappearing. So we said that it first happened the night that she saw Theo kiss Olivia, and then it keeps happening, and sometimes in plain sight of others. Like there was that time when she was just running and someone like just she smashed into somebody and there was like, who's that? Like there was no one there. And I just thought it was such a cool concept, and it just perfectly illustrated how insignificant and worthless these situations can make us feel. So I think so many people will be able to relate to this idea of feeling invisible or feeling like their true self isn't seen. And as I mentioned earlier, as an adult, I can often feel like this is social surrounding. So is this something that you both can relate to, with whether it's with your high school experience or whether as it's childhood or an adult? How did that make you feel?
My high school experience was not like that. I was a really confident teenager. I don't know why, and I don't know what happened to her, though, because like you, Arden, I find myself feeling this way a lot more as an adult, especially as a creative. And we have to already battle imposter syndrome, and it's really hard as a writer not to compare your creative journey and your career to that of your peers. So I'm probably the most insecure I've ever been, and constantly kind of navigating that dark cloud of, am I good enough or do I deserve success? And I actually found this book to be really healing in that respect, and I wish I could be Baker. Like, his philosophy on art and what success looks like was incredible. He did it for the love of it and didn't really care what anyone else thought or if it won any awards. There's this line that Iris's counselor says, and I have to read it. It's my favorite in the book. And she says, "Here's a secret not many people know, Iris. You don't have to believe in yourself, not all the time and never absolutely." And that just felt like Ms. Ammon was talking directly to me out of the book. And it was one of those moments where you read a line and then you read it again and then you close the book and you say like, damn, I needed that. And then you open the book again and read it all over again. Like, can we just get that on t-shirts? Because I feel like I need that reminder of like, it's okay to have the little blips when you don't fully believe in yourself. But the important thing is just to keep doing what you love. I found this book very, yeah, just healing in that respect.
Oh, I'm so glad, because yeah, I think it definitely came from quite a personal place. The sort of not being seen thing is, I guess, definitely my younger self, who really wanted to disappear quite often because of the fear of being her true self, letting too much out. I didn't start writing myself until I was past my 20s. I think because I was scared to make art and to fail. And so it's definitely been a sort of a journey that I've been on, and I am still much happier not being the center of attention. But now I don't think of it so much as a character flaw, just as part of myself, and I'm kind of happier accommodating my introvert tendencies. So it definitely, it is a very personal book. It's lovely to know that it resonates with other people as well, so thank you for sharing that.
So kind of speaking of taking control of your life, it doesn't matter how badly Iris is trying to keep control of everything going wrong in her life, it doesn't work that way. She can't pick and choose when she turns invisible. She can't even rely on Baker to bring her out of it. And she also can't keep silent the truth about what Olivia and Theo did. Of course, everything is going to have to bubble to the surface. Mm-hmm. And when it does come out, her friendship trio is completely shattered. Bert is torn between her two best friends. Iris feels betrayed that Bert knew what Olivia had done, and all Bert's preaching of women's empowerment feels so hypocritical now. And Theo won't let go, constantly texting Iris or trying to make her jealous, and then using an intimate picture of her to promote a song he wrote about her. Gross. And Baker's trying to be there, but how can Iris trust his true intentions when he's seen with pretty girls or hanging out at parties with his friends? Like, why would he care about Iris? Back to those kind of dark feelings. And oh, it was just, there's so many feels in this book. I felt so many things. I was angry at Theo for being such a gaslighting pleb. I was angry at Olivia for what she did. I was kind of equally feeling sorry for Bert, but also really frustrated for her. And most of all, I just wanted Iris to see her worth and to believe in herself. And I really love that it wasn't as simple as Baker just being the answer to everything. He couldn't bring her back. Iris had to do it herself. And there was also something really beautiful in how Iris made up with Olivia. Even though I didn't forgive her, Iris did. Better person than me. But we see things shift when Bert enters Iris's project into the gallery show. But Iris knows that she needs to show something else. So even though it disqualifies her from winning, she replaces the pieces with different ones. And it was just, like, I don't know about you, Arden, but I just found it really emotional. This, how she took all those things that have been said about her, the words that have chipped away at her, cracked and broken her, and used them in her art. And that she was finally brave enough to show her true self, vulnerabilities and all. And it was her, not Baker, not Bert, but Iris, who freed Iris Green. And I just love that so much. And I think it's such a powerful and important story that every young person should read. So was it important to you, Louise? Well, clearly it was important to you because you've written the book, but why was it important to you that Iris restore her friendship with Olivia? And Arden, what did you think about how all these different kind of character story arcs ended?
Wow, there's a lot to unpack in that question, Jess.
I believe in you.
So I'm going to start with the photos because I loved that moment when Iris replaced those photos in the gallery. I just thought it was such a huge moment and such an important moment for her. I could see beneath her, like the Iris Green surface, that this brave and brilliant person was breaking free, and I was totally all in for her. To be honest, there were some really frustrating parts in which I really wanted her to stand up for herself. Like, I wanted her to tell Theo what a waste of space he was. I wanted her to tell Olivia to pee off and Bert to a point. But I also knew, experience and just, you know, just life, that someone like Theo would just completely turn everything around onto her and still come up smelling of roses. Like, these people get so much pleasure from watching someone in pain. And the only thing that you can ever do to help yourself is just sometimes letting it go. And although it sucks that people like Theo can abuse, gaslight, and lie and repeat this like throughout their whole lives, the worst thing for them is not feeling wanted or needed. And I was just like, this is exactly what Iris needs, and this is exactly what Theo deserves to a point. And Iris Green just done exactly this. She found herself, she learned to accept herself, and Baker definitely helped. And there were times, and I think it's just like, you know, the editorial side of me coming out, I wanted her to do this without a boy. But you know what? This life isn't like that. We do need people sometimes to see us, to help lift us. But it didn't in any way take anything away from her own personal growth, I don't think. I loved that Baker was introduced and he saw her, and she gradually began to see herself, and she did see herself, and he gave her that support, but she still done it on her own. So yeah, I thought that was really important. Her arc, I would change a thing. I know that I said I felt frustrated at points, but she felt real and she felt reachable. I just thought it was perfectly written, and it was just such an important read.
So I completely appreciated that it might be a bit divisive about how Olivia and Iris end up at the end, but I did want Iris to forgive Olivia. Sorry.
Okay.
Because the two of them are like, I think they're really similar in terms of the insecurities that are lurking underneath the surface.
Yeah.
That are driving them to act in those self-destructive, limiting ways. So Iris forgiving Olivia to me kind of felt like Iris forgiving herself a bit, and acknowledging that we're all flawed and we all sometimes act in ways that we're not super proud of. And I think that's particularly important as a writer whose primary audience is young people, because there's that degree of almost responsibility to, where possible, give characters a shot of redemption. Mm-hmm. Because in her heart, Olivia is not a bad person, I promise.
We believe you.
She just, you know, just made mistakes.
No, I think you showed her character really well, because I did feel sorry for her at quite a lot of the points as the book went on, and just seeing like the effort that she would go to be meeting up with people that were older, I was just like, please don't see something in yourself. You are worth more than that. Yes, you've made that horrible mistake, but when you've got someone like Theo, who is such a, like, so silver-tongued and able to just make women fall at his feet, and she's very, like, she lacks in confidence. She's beautiful. She's, like, you know, the typical Instagram influencer-type person. But underneath that facade, she's not confident. And like you said, she does have a lot of similarities to Iris in that kind of confidence way. So I was really glad that they did make up and she forgave her. It still didn't end up perfect, and there was still that it would take me a while to be able to be close to her again, whether or not she could. But for her to forgive Olivia was such a huge moment, and I was really glad about that. So I think it was really important for her arc to do that. But yeah, at the end of this book, Iris has taken a summer job at the gallery. I love this part, by the way. Baker is off to travel the world. I didn't love that part, but I was still happy for Baker. Although he did book a return ticket to come and see Iris again at Christmas. And they share a moment where Iris knows that the relationship might not be forever, but she can now say that she knows whatever happens, that she'll be okay. And I love that. So what was your reason, Louise, for not having them end in this serious relationship riding off, like together in the sunset? And what did you think, Jess, about how Iris and Baker ended things?
I loved it. Yeah, you know my kind of thought on these kind of relationships. So I wouldn't have changed a thing about the end. And in my mind, controversially, in my head, as I read it, I'm reading it thinking they're not going to end up together. And I'm a huge believer in people coming into our lives exactly at the moment we need them. And then maybe drifting out with them once we've kind of learned what we need to learn through that person. Like, think Mary Poppins, but as a hot guy in a dark room. I don't know. But teenage love rarely lasts. But that doesn't mean it's not important or life-changing. And I think of what I love, I just think it's important to show teenage relationships parting ways for good reasons, not because someone's cheated or because they've never really understood you or valued you. Like, you can love someone and still not be there happily ever after, but that doesn't downplay the part you played in their life. And I feel the reason I feel so strongly about this type of storytelling is because I had that person in my life, and I had a guy who was great and kind and good and pushed me out of my comfort zone, who I loved. And I can honestly say, hand on my heart, had a positive part to play in me becoming the person I am today. And when I think back on our time together, I only have good memories, and I have nothing but gratitude and fondness for him. Spoiler, we didn't end up together. And that's fine, because it's actually, it's better than fine, because I met my husband, who's the absolute love of my life. And that guy met the love of his life too. And we still had our happily ever afters. And even though we're not really a part of each other's lives anymore, we're still a part of each other's stories. And that's how I saw Baker. And maybe that's me totally projecting my experiences onto these characters. So I'm actually really interested to know your take on it, Louise. How did you see them ending up ultimately in the future?
Well, I feel like you said it perfectly, so I don't need to add anything. Because, yeah, I think it is that. I don't see them being together forever. I don't see them being the love of each other's lives. I think maybe they could be friends, you know, going forward, because they have a really good friendship too, as well as it being romantic. I don't actually know why I'm like this, but I also do just struggle to let my characters be happy ever, particularly in love. So that was probably also a factor in not having them end up together. But yeah, a big theme of the book, I guess, is, as you said before, Arden, like losing and letting go of people, and how actually it's okay to let go. Obviously, yes, if that person's hurt you, but also just if your lives are going in different directions, as they are at this time in their lives, because they're at that transition to university time or to whatever else they're going on to at the end of sixth form, which is that huge leap into the unknown, and you leave behind friends. And you're always sort of optimistic that you'll stay in touch, but realistically, you will lose people along the way. And Jess, I've had sort of friends, I guess, that have been like that, like you were talking about, where they've meant so much to me at the time, and we've drifted apart. And I'm just so grateful for having had them in my life. And I'm not sort of sad necessarily that we're not still in touch, but I still think fondly on those memories. So I think Baker would be one of those people for Iris.
I love that. And I'm such a fan of friendships and relationships ending beautifully in books. I don't mean ending, I've said this before, I don't mean ending beautifully like they live happily ever after, but like ending, but in a beautiful way, like kind of, I just think that can be really powerful in storytelling.
Yeah, because I think it's important to show that this does happen as well. I think teenage emotions are obviously like totally all-consuming and so strong, stronger than I think they can ever be in your life, because it's the first time you're experiencing something. So it's totally unknown, isn't it? And the more you experience something, the more you realize you can get through things and you learn and you know, you go through a heartbreak and then you'll go through another heartbreak again later on, but you've known that you've been okay, you was okay after that first one, and you know that you can be okay again. And I think just showing all the different types of relationships that and ways of ending that there are, I think, is really important, because not everybody does end on this huge, that's it, we hate each other and we're never going to talk to each other again. There are those relationships that do, that are really strong, but do fizzle out and turn into friendships, and I think that was really important to show. But just as a whole, like, I really, really enjoyed this book, and I thought it was a really important book. And I've also just enjoyed just this podcast, just having the author of the book that we talk about on the show is something that we've never done, like I said, and it's just, it's been really fun.
So interesting.
To get your views and your thoughts, and like, we're telling you how we thought, and it's quite nerve-wracking just to be so open to the author, because we know how important the books are to you. To for us to give you our feelings, it's hard, but I've really enjoyed doing it. So yeah, thank you so much for joining us. It's been such a pleasure to have you with us, and thank you also for writing such an incredible book.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It has been so lovely to chat to you both. I've had a really lovely time, and thank you for all your thoughts on the book. I feel like I just wanted to listen to you guys and not have to talk about it myself. But I'm glad that we did this.
And now we have our apricot jam.
Yeah.
We have another flavour to add.
And talking of incredible jams, books, Jess, can you tell us a bit about the book you've chosen to feature for next month?
So before I tease our next book, I just wanted to echo Arden's thanks to Louise for taking the time to come and chat with us. We have so much love for this book, as you can tell. And we've had a lot of love for it on our social media. Shelley said it was such a great book by a super talent. I mean, I've heard Shelley raving about this book since the day it was released, so that's not a surprise.
Becca, even before it was released, I think, didn't she have an arc, I think?
Becca Anderson, author of Officially Losing It, said she loved it and it had such an important message behind it. Sue Wollman, author of Watch Your Back, said it was a beautifully written book. And that's just a few of the comments. Like, we've got so many comments about this one. And yeah, so just thank you for being here and for your story that's touched so many people. So for my choice next month, I've gone back to one of my favourite genres, romantasy, and I'm going to try to get Arden on board with this one. So it is described as a fiery enemies to lovers, which is like just one of my favourite tropes ever. And that's all I'm kind of going to say. I want to keep it mysterious with a kind of cloak and dagger tease this month. But yeah, that's all I'm going to say about it.
So a romanticy. I do love an enemies to lovers, so I am looking forward to it. Louise, I'm not a massive fantasy reader, so this is, I love a contemporary it's just all, that's kind of my favorite, so yeah, but I am looking forward to it, Jess. I am
It's our favourite thing about the podcast is we pick books so that we're kind of pushing each other out of our comfort zones of what we read. And there's so many books that surprise us where we're like, that's not my usual genre, but I absolutely love that book. Or ones we think, oh, I'm going to love this, but maybe there were elements to it that we were like, oh, I wish this had happened instead. Yeah. So that's half the fun of it, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Jess isn't a huge romance fan, and I made her read a romance last time.
No.
So yeah, I can't wait. I'm looking forward to reading it, and I am excited.
Say it like you mean it.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Right, okay. So I just want to say thank you all for tuning in. We've really enjoyed this month's episode and having Louise with us. So thank you all for listening. Please do like and comment and all that jazz on our post. It really means a lot to us. And if you have any questions, we're happy to answer. This has been YA Book Jam with Arden Jones,
JL Bleakley, and our special guest host, Louise Finch.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please remember to like and subscribe where you listen. You can follow us on Instagram and X at YA_bookjam. If you're a publisher and have books coming out this year that you think would be interested in, you can email us at yabookjampodcast@gmail.com.
You can follow Shelley on Instagram, X, Blue Sky, and TikTok at ShelleyMacBooks. To watch Ardent interview authors and illustrators, check out Kidlit Live on YouTube and follow on Instagram at Kidlit Live. You can also follow Arden on X, Blue Sky, and Instagram at Arden Eliza Jones.
And you can follow Jess on Instagram, Blue Sky, and TikTok at JL Bleakley. And you can follow Louise on Instagram at Lou Finch Writes.